Good morning. This is Chris Gore, and it's DVD Tuesday. No, wait, it's Attack of the Doc, available now. And you are listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'll see you in the future.
Good morning! Welcome to Too Much Scrolling for October 3rd, 2023. I'm Steve Fodor.
I'm Spooky Chip Hassenflow.
I was going to say spooky, and I didn't pull the cord on spooky. We're both spooky, Chip.
That's right. It's pumpkin spice season, Steve.
We're just a couple of guys sitting around talking about things that are important to us. Hopefully they're important to you. If you need more information, there's so many great ways to find more information. It is spooky season. I look forward to the all of the newscasters using that as their intro this week.
That's right. And lots of apples and pumpkins, Steve.
I got her number. How you like them apples?
Film at 11.
Brings us to our film at 11, our movie of the week. You, sir, have gone to the movies to see the latest sci-fi AI war movie. This is The Creator.
Yes, it is a war movie, and there's my first warning on this. If you are a person who has been through war situations or suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder, I have to give you a caution. This is a pretty intense situation, and there are a number of intense situations that certainly could trigger some responses from that. This is a person who is watching this who is not suffering from that. I immediately said, wow, there's some intense scenes here.
So this is a real war movie, very similar to the war movies that we've seen before in that sci-fi background of what if the AI and the humans were fighting?
Exactly. So let me just give you, it's 73 out of 100. This is one of the better films I've seen this year. There are a lot of big ideas explored in it. There's war, there's peace. There's the desire for peace and to be left alone. There's religion, certainly Buddhism, and more knowledge that you would have on that would have something to do with it. Self-determination. Mm. You know, when does a being, a sentient being, gain human rights?
Mm.
So that is something that's explored here. And to what extent does aggression, especially human aggression, play in the human experience? And then finally, you know, what does it really mean to be a parent? So there's a love story here. And it just is a very intense movie, very thoughtful movie, lots and lots of tropes. So you're not going to go in here and feel like you've like, I've never seen this before. But I think you're going to immediately say, wow, this was very skilled. It looks beautiful. The director was from Rogue One.
Yes, Gareth Edwards, who wrote and directed this movie, was the director of Rogue One. And he's got some really interesting ideas and some beautiful renderings of some of the pictures of this movie, right?
Absolutely. In fact, everything that Rogue One was, I mean, there was just these beautiful visuals. This is certainly a proper grown-up science fiction. This is not an all ages type of story. This is, I would say, you know, teens that could experience intense situations and would probably enjoy this, especially if they like the science fiction genre. But this is a beautifully rendered film. There's no doubt that he really has mastered the photography of film.
It's interesting that this is an original story. It's not an adaptation of a book, which is what we usually see in sci-fi. There's usually a long history of a story. This one is brand new.
Interesting. Well, like I said, there's a lot of tropes there. So you're going to be familiar with some of it.
Gotcha.
And there's a very Asian influence. That's where our war takes place. In addition to that, you know, the casting of this was incredibly well done. So I really enjoyed the casting. The acting was wonderful. I think that, you know, where you're going to enjoy the film additionally is it's over, and then you're going to drive home. And you, if you spend some time sort of thinking about it, meditating on it, how about that? Then reflecting on sort of the concepts that were being discussed, I think that you will find some enlightenment, Steve. How about that?
That's what good sci-fi does, right? Good sci-fi shines a mirror on what we are doing in the idea of how could it be done some other way. And in this case, it's the AI. They create a society. They even have a religion amongst the AI. And then we get to, you know, questions about how do we do things. The original title was True Love. How about that?
That's interesting.
There's something else going on in this other than just a war movie, just a sci-fi movie. There's so much to think about.
Well, you know, when you're a young person, you really think about yourself quite a bit. I mean, you're developing yourself. You're trying to make yourself marketable. You're trying to fit in. You're trying to do a lot. And as you get older, you kind of expand this because you recognize your time is limited. And what can you do to help those around you to experience their part of life too? So it really is, there's a lot of growth in this film. And I can understand the original title, True Love, being part of that. Mm. Steve, speaking of true love.
Yes, Chip. Happy homecoming week for everybody who's going to homecoming this week.
Apple TV this summer brought us a movie, didn't they?
Yes, you watched The Beanie Bubble. This is the story of the Beanie Baby craze of the 1990s.
It is. It is about Ty Warner, played by Zach Galifianakis.
Oh, boy. I can only imagine what Zach Galifianakis brought to this part.
And this is where you really need to kind of understand. This took place all in the Chicago area.
Hmm. I was not aware that this was a local phenomenon.
I wasn't aware either. So this was released maybe a month or so ago, and it is called The Beanie Bubble. And it is a film. It is a film by Apple TV or Apple Films. And it was released through Apple TV Plus. So Elizabeth Banks is also part of this film. And it is the story of the Beanie Bubble, the rise of Beanie Babies, some of the innovations that Ty Warner made to his dolls. Ty Warner suffered from a lot of mental health issues, and they're going to play out through this film. And he was diagnosed with this. He spent time developing these plush dolls, these stuffed animals, and his innovation was to not fill them all the way. So you could bend them over, you could pose them a little bit. And through some discussions and some, you know, with children and stuff like that, they talked about making them smaller.
Hmm.
And I know. So you get a little bit of the story of how this came to be. The thing that I ultimately was fascinated by was one of the employees who was just a young person from, like I said, the Chicago area. Her name is Lena Trevetti, and she was the first person who saw the power of using a website for e-commerce.
Mm.
So you have to go back to the original part of the internet. You know, the internet was for email, maybe for some academic stuff. But websites didn't really exist during that time.
Right.
But she said, oh, well, we can put up a website. She was very supportive of eBay. And Ty, who was very concerned that his intellectual property was being taken from him because people were buying Beanie Babies and they were auctioning them off through eBay and making more money, she said, no. This is part of our advertising. And if we do limited productions, we can drive advertising. So she eventually was, I think, fired or left. It doesn't really matter. Ty ran a very dysfunctional company, but was surrounded by very competent people.
Hmm.
So I think that any person who has interest in commerce, a little bit about Chicago history, about a economic craze, pop culture. This is a really kind of fun movie for that. Apple's really done a good job with many of their movies. They're putting together really a wonderful catalog that is worthy of exploring at least for a month or two, and then revisiting at some other point. I like this. I was going to say this is 55 out of 100 and worthy of my time.
Okay. I am intrigued. As usual, Apple TV Plus has things that they're not getting their advertising out there. I did not know about this until you mentioned it today.
Mm-hmm. Well, Steve, I'm not the only one who watched some films. You got to watch a film too.
And you're not the only one that watched a Chicago history film. I watched a movie that I didn't hear about until this week. It's called 52577. It's on Paramount Plus, not Apple TV Plus, but it is the story of the birth of geek culture in the late 1970s, where a high school junior named Patrick Reed Johnson was finding his voice in Wadsworth, Illinois, a very small northern Illinois town just north of Gurnee and in the shadow of the Great America theme park.
So north of Gurnee, south of Kenosha, Wisconsin.
In between.
So I would say, what do you think? There's 5 miles in between those two areas?
Maybe a little bit more. But yeah, a very small town. At the time, in 1977, the population of Wadsworth was 750 people. It's now doubled that. It's a 1,300 people small town.
And potentially, Wadsworth could argue they are part of the Chicago metro area.
Oh, for sure. This is a story of a kid growing up in the Chicago suburbs who loves movies, who loves film and studying and how to create film, and goes in the backyard and makes movies. Sounds familiar, Chip.
It does. And what is the significance of the date, May 25th, 1977, Steve?
Oh, that seems like an important date in history, doesn't it? That is the release date for the movie Star Wars. Star Wars, Chip. Star Wars was released on May 25th, 1977. And that is the central part of this story. This kid is so excited about this movie because he went to California months before and he was one of the first people to see a very rough cut of Star Wars in George Lucas's theater, and had that opportunity to start the special hype that is that movie from our childhood.
Tell me a little bit about that. So how did he get involved in movies, and how did he get to California?
Well, he saw the movie 2001, A Space Odyssey, when he was 8 years old, and he was fascinated by film from that moment forward. His mother said, this kid is special. He's got potential. He's making movies in the backyard with all of his friends, all of his siblings that are a part of all of his silly little movies. She got on the phone and she made phone calls to people in California to get Patrick Reed Johnson an opportunity to meet some of the people that created 2001, who happened to be now in the employ of Lucasfilm. And so he saw the production, the models, the miniatures that were being created for Star Wars.
So before the internet,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, things were much different as far as finding those connections. So how just incredibly blessed that ended up happening.
And she really drove that. She looked up and found phone numbers in the, you know, white pages of Los Angeles, California, and made phone calls and made the right connection with those people. It's something that I've done all my life, but I do a lot more with the World Wide Web. I can find authors and directors and actors and make connections with those people in such a different way than I could have in 1977.
So this film is currently showing on Paramount Plus. Would you recommend it?
To a very specific demographic, absolutely. If you are a geek and in your middle ages and you enjoy Star Wars to no end, this is a movie for you. If you're from Northern Illinois, or you are aware of Northern Illinois and the American Eagle ride at Great America, this movie is for you. If you ever went to a General Cinemas, that is featured as a part of the history of Patrick Reed Johnson's life. And I love this movie to pieces. The acting is brilliant. John Francis Daly is the one who plays Patrick Reed Johnson in this. He is best known for his role in Freaks and Geeks in 1999, and he was on the Fox hit Bones in 2005. But the story of this guy, this is an autobiographical drama. It's so much the story of creativity and how we can take our creativity to the next level. He calls it our American Graffiti. He says that this is the movie that has that story of that kid making it in the wider world. For everybody else, I don't know. I don't know who else other than kids from the 70s who would love this as much as I do, but there's some real heart. There's a love story. There's a coming of age story. There's a family dynamic story that is really beautiful in this. Book it. Brings us to our book of the week. And we have another brilliant author with us this week, Chip.
We're so lucky, Steve. You know, it's always fun to, one, learn about what they write about, the passion that they have. And then secondly, you know, meet them and kind of understand a little bit about what inspired them to write.
That's right. Author Carla Moultrie joins us to share her series of awesome girl books this week. Good morning, Carla.
Good morning. Good morning. How are you doing, gentlemen?
Fantastic. We're doing well.
It's October, it's spooky season, it's time to talk about superheroes. You have written an interesting children's book called Awesome Girl, The Awesome World of Camille Moultrie, Second Grade. You published this in 2022, and it's all about a superhero.
Well, we spelled awesome, A-U-S-O-M-E, so that means there's a little twist there. So let's start off with the first question. Let's ask, what is autism?
Autism, for those who don't know, is it's a neurological disability that children, well, persons are born with. There's really no reason where it comes from. It's suspected that it may be genetics, it may be environmental. We just don't know. Like I said, it's a neurological disability that primarily impacts communication. And persons and just the way that they develop. There's some children and persons have delays in different things, being it speech or, you know, sensory issues. It could be a multiple things, but there's different delays that they experience that typical people don't experience. Some children don't speak at all. And when I say speech, it's speech and communication. They don't speak at all, or they speak very little, or some use adaptive devices to communicate, or just some just have problems comprehending and communicating their needs, their desires, or just expressing themselves.
Is that when someone says that they're on the spectrum, is that what they mean?
That's exactly what they mean. And the unique thing about autism is that it's very broad. There no two people with autism are the same. You can have a person that is on the low end of the spectrum where they absolutely do not communicate verbally, and they need a lot of support, to someone being on the very higher end of the spectrum where they have where they can talk, they can communicate. They just may have a challenge maybe expressing themselves. And then you have some people that are somewhere in the middle, you know, they can communicate a little bit here or there and need some support. So it's very broad. The spectrum is extremely broad. My daughter is in what they would consider the moderate space. She's somewhere in the middle. She has words, she can communicate, but she doesn't, she still requires support.
Is autism a phase of life? I mean, can they outgrow it?
No, actually, they don't. Autism is something, if you are born with autism, and once you receive, and some people, you don't really know like my daughter, we didn't know that she was autistic. We didn't start noticing symptoms until she was around two. She officially got her diagnosed right before she turned three. And that's the case of most people. Most people who are diagnosed with autism start, the parents and family begin to notice symptoms around 18 to 24 months. Some people are, you know, they have, it's more pronounced at birth, but we don't see symptoms until around 18 to 24 months of age. And you live with it for the rest of your life. It's something that you always have. There's no cure. You don't outgrow it. It's just a part of your life.
And we're still understanding some of this. We still have questions about how a person living with autism sees the world differently, hears the world differently, and understands the world differently. And it's fascinating to me as a teacher to experience that perspective from my students who are on that spectrum. So your daughter is Camille. She is the superhero of this story, right?
Mm-hmm. She is. She is the superhero of this story. And it's, as you said, you know, you're a teacher. It's amazing to experience the world with them. You know, things that I find very normal, typical, she doesn't, you know, and that just requires us, you know, paying a lot closer attention to her and her needs. And she has her unique ways of notifying us and letting us know when she doesn't understand this, she doesn't understand that, or she needs some support. So it's quite interesting, you know, caring for a person who lives with autism.
It seems like we're hearing more about neurodivergence lately. Is that true? Or is social media changing our viewpoint on what is autism?
You know, what's interesting is that there is a greater conversation around autism now. You know, when I look at when we first got our daughter's diagnosis with autism, I remember the statistics saying one in 44 kids were born with autism. And now it's more like one in 68 kids born with autism. Mm-hmm. So it's more, we're seeing it more. And I believe that just because it's impacting so many more people, it's becoming more of a conversation. And as you said, social media is amazing. We can now share it, and more people can see and understand and hear about it. So it's definitely been an amazing, social media is an amazing platform where anything pretty much can be shown. But now autism is definitely becoming more of a conversation.
So what would a person do if they felt that they were on the spectrum, or if a family member was potentially on the spectrum? How do you address that?
Well, first, and I'll use our personal example. You know, my husband actually noticed it first. We literally were living in New Jersey. We moved to Georgia. And we started gathering in daycare, and I noticed, you know, I would drop her off, she would cry to the top of her lungs. And I personally thought it was just, she was just, you know, new place, and she was just having separation anxiety. And I wasn't noticing what my husband was noticing. And then he said, Camille's not using her words anymore. And I just thinking, well, no, she's not. She's just upset, and, you know, she's just crying. And, you know, I did make the connection. Mm-hmm. And we quickly found our pediatrician here. And the pediatrician had some concerns as well. And she recommended that we send her, get a developmental pediatrician. And we did that. And then getting a developmental pediatrician, they were able to see that she wasn't, you know, she had stopped reaching milestones. And it was, you know, for me, but then they also said, well, girls talk late, you know, and that's, you know, girls are different, and, you know, they don't, you know, autism doesn't always present itself in girls the way that it does boys. So she thought it could have been autism, but then she's like, maybe it's not. But I would encourage any parent or any even adult, because we're finding more adults are getting diagnosed with autism later in life. I would encourage you to reach out to your primary healthcare physician. If it's a parent, you know, your child's pediatrician, get a second opinion, see if you can get into, see a behavioral specialist or psychologist, because they'll be the ones to help you, you know, understand if it is autism or any other neurological disability. It could be ADHD or, you know, any different type of neurological disability. Definitely do not, you know, feel afraid. Don't be embarrassed, because the earlier you can get a diagnosis, the earlier you can get support and you know, intervention, and that helps increase them for having a better chance, a better quality of life.
In my household, the diagnosis is so frustrating sometimes, because there's adults who have been suffering from neurodivergence and didn't know it until they've suddenly knew it, and then mm-hmm. understand and get the treatment that helps, mm-hmm. especially young girls yes. young girls just have fallen through so many cracks, and that's so frustrating as an educator and as a parent, that we have not been serving that part of our society with what they need. Yes, knowing more, the more you know, welcome to Gen X podcast, the more you know, the more you can understand.
I was going to say, tell us a little bit about when you decided to address this in a book, and particularly a children's book.
Camille is now 10. And when we first got the diagnosis, it was 3 months before she turned three. We started, you know, around two, you know, started reaching out to therapists and everything, trying to get the diagnosis. We finally get the diagnosis. And I went through what I think every mother that I know who has a child with autism experience. I remember when the doctor told me it is autism. I remember being there with my husband, and I just broke down in tears, because I was Google searching everything, you know, because initially they were saying, well, maybe she's just going to speak late, and, you know, but as a parent, I'm seeing the symptoms, and Google is telling me, WebMD is telling me autism based on all these symptoms. And I was devastated, because, you know, they tell you all these things that your child may never do. They say, well, she may never speak. She may never do this. She may never develop friends. She may never do this. She may never do that. And you may have to care for her the rest of your life. You have to think about, you know, all of these crazy and horrible things that you don't really plan for. So, because you're thinking you're gonna raise a child that's gonna be great and wonderful, go off to college and do all these grand things. So that's what you're thinking. So then, you know, I went through the grief process for a few months of grieving that my child's life won't look like what I thought it was gonna look like. But then I began to just notice, as we started her in different therapies, occupational therapy, physical therapy, speech therapies. And one of the therapists told me, they said, she's very smart. Your daughter is very smart. She may not be communicating now, but she's very smart. She gets it. Like, she understands a lot more than you think she understands. You're just looking at the delays, but she understands very well what's going on around her. And she said, don't, you know, keep her inside, you know, expose her to different things, expose her to life, expose her to the world, because she's going to live in this world. There are going to always be people with autism and neurological disabilities. So she's not alone in this world. You've got to expose her, give her an opportunity to live. And as we begin to do more of that, because we literally take her everywhere. We've traveled abroad. She goes abroad. She does everything. She has just as many stamps on her passport as I do. So we literally said, we're going to make sure that she's going to experience life. But as we begin to expose her, we clearly saw children just didn't understand. Children would say, you know, would point or just stare, and they didn't understand. And I never took offense to that. I saw that children just genuinely did not understand. You know, they would, you know, like, we would be around family at the holidays, and my daughter would play by herself. She would take her couple toys or her device, and she'd be by herself. And the other kids, because she always had more toys, because everybody just bought her more toys, they would want to play with her and her toys, and she would just huddle in her little corner with her toys. And some of the little cousins would say, well, Camille won't play with me. She won't share her toys with me. She won't talk to me. And well, they'll go up to her and say, hey, Camille. And they'll try to talk to her, and she just couldn't respond. And I saw that as a teachable moment. I said, wow, these children literally, they don't understand. They don't understand. They don't mean any harm. They don't understand. They don't know. And I began looking for books, you know, just really to see, you know, how I could just, like, buy books, because I didn't want to, you know, say tell kids, hey, you know, I didn't want to have a whole intellectual conversations with 4 and 5 year olds, because 4 and 5 year olds just, right, you can't have that kind of conversation with them. And so I started looking for books that I could buy them and give, you know, give to my little cousins and other kids. And I didn't really see anything that really reflected her. I did find one little book about a little boy with autism, but it was very clinical. His mother wrote the book. It was highly clinical. She was a behavioral therapist who was raising a little boy with autism. And I thought, you know, her idea was really good, but it was very high level. And I was thinking, I really don't understand this. So I doubt most kids will understand this. So I was talking to a friend of mine, and she actually has a daughter who has hearing loss. She's a former educator, and she wrote a book about her daughter who has hearing loss. And they've done a couple books. And I told her, I said, I really want to share Camille's story. I said, but I don't, you know, if I share her story, I want it to be in a way that children can understand it and that children get it. Because like my daughter is a child who has autism. She's going to live with autism. And these children, these other children who do not have neurological disabilities, they're going to live in a world with other people with neurological disabilities. So I really felt in my heart that it's time that we, you know, that we put more information out there to help children understand neurological disabilities. And because they're going to live with people in a world with, you know, persons with disabilities. And I believe if we can start with children, helping them understand their peers with differences, we get to change the whole world. I mean, the world will be a better place for kids like my daughter and other kids, and even the kids who, you know, their peers who don't have neurological disabilities. Some of them will grow up to be psychologists and behavioral therapists and doctors and nurses, and they're going to care for these people. So this gives them a head start on how to support those persons with disabilities and differences. And just, you know, it just changes the world. And I've honestly, the book has been so well received, and I'm grateful that that people, you know, I meet people and I share with them, I share a story. I've done multiple book readings, and then, you know, families are just excited. Matter of fact, I mean, I've even gotten an opportunity to be a keynote at the end of this month for an Autism Foundation, just to share about our journey with autism. So, and it's a place where, you know, a lot of kids come. So I'm excited. And that's really, the goal is not, was not just about to talk about autism, but really to just share what autism is to children who don't have autism. It's really for those people. It's really so they could begin to understand. I mean, it's really, and that's what's amazing to see when a parent who does not have a child who has a disability purchase the book, and their child reads it, and they'll say, oh, this kid in my class does this, or he covers his ears, or, you know, he does this, or he doesn't speak a lot. So it's just really a testament to, you know, really what this whole conversation about autism is. You know, we talk about autism awareness, autism acceptance. We'll never have acceptance if we don't talk about it. And I think that's where we're going.
So when you're writing this book, our lead could be anything. You chose our lead to be a superhero. Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit about that decision.
Well, my decision was to make her a superhero, because I saw that was something that kids really understand and resonate to. They love superheroes. And I thought about me being Gen X. One of my favorite superheroes growing up was Wonder Woman and Superman. And, you know, we remember Clark Kent being Clark Kent. He was, you know, he'd be working by day and in his suit and tie. Then he'd go in the telephone booth and change and come back out as Superman. And then that's what gave me the inspiration. And it was literally in my head for over a year, like 2018, 2019. It was in my head. And I was like, I wanted to be a superhero. I wanted to be a superhero. And I didn't know really how that looked, how it would look. And I remember And one of my friends, she posted, she texted me. She actually has a daughter who has autism. Her daughter and my daughter, ironically, share the same birthday. And but her daughter is 22 years old and my daughter is 10. And she said, you should join this Facebook group. There's a lot of moms, you know, that have children on the spectrum. It's for moms who have kids on the spectrum, and or grandparents who are raising kids on the spectrum. So I was like, okay. And literally the next week was, it was in March of 2020. And it was Exceptional Education Month. And her teacher dressed up all the kids like a superhero. And she gave me a picture. The teacher sent me a picture of her dressed like a superhero. And I was just ecstatic. I said, okay, this is it. This is it. The superhero. It's coming to life. It's not just in my head. These people literally see these kids as superheroes as well. And, you know, superheroes are powerful and they have strengths that, you know, others don't have. And that's how we got creative about it. You know, because truthfully, I mean, with autism, while she has some delays, she also has some strengths that I just don't have. She's extremely organized. I'm not. She runs really, really fast. I mean, like really, really fast. Like we're trying to get her into a track and field program, because it's literally, I'll never forget this. We were in the mall and she broke out running and I was so nervous. I was terrified. I'm like, listen, I'm too old for this. I'm 42 years old. I can't run this fast. I just can't run behind a kid. That's just not what I do. And the guy, I literally was like yelling in the mall, like, please stop that little girl. Stop that little girl. And this guy grabbed her. And he was like, you have a little flojo on your hands. He was like, he had to break out, like trying to catch her. He was like, you have flojo on your hands. And he was like, you got to do something with that. Mm-hmm. And she's quick. She's really fast. And so we began to highlight, you know, on her her strengths. And, you know, that's what we said, you know, in the book, we call her strengths or superpowers. While there are delays, you know, that children with autism have, because they have some form of delay, and some of them are different for others, but they also have strengths that we just don't have. And and we wanted to highlight that in a unique way, an interesting way that children could understand. They can, versus them seeing it as weird, they get to see it as a strength.
So visuals are very important to children's books. And mm-hmm. obviously, you had to choose an illustrator. Tell us a little bit about Calvin Reynolds and how you chose him to work with you.
Calvin Reynolds is absolutely amazing. I was sharing this, my vision with another mom, friend of mine, and she actually wrote a children's book about her son, who little boy. It was affirmations for boys. She's like, we often see all these books for affirmations for girls. You are enough. You're this, you're that, whatever. She said, I don't really see anything for boys. So she wrote a book about affirmations for little boys. And she's a young lady I went to college with. And I just wanted to support her book. So I bought the book. But I remember looking at the illustrations thinking, wow, this is really good. These pictures really look like her son. And I literally just reached out to her and I said, hey, can you share me your illustrator's information? I'm doing this children's book and I need an illustrator. I know nothing about drawing, or I don't even want to attempt to do that. So she gave me his contact information. And I reached out to him and him and my publisher, and I told him my vision. And he was like, okay. He said, you know, he read the manuscript, and he was really fascinated, because he said, I've done tons of children's books, and he's an author as well. And he said, I've done tons of children's books, but I've never done one about children with disabilities. And he said, this just totally opened my mind, you know. And mm-hmm. and he said it just caused him to look like he did his own research on autism. And we got on a call, and he said, you know, you want her as a superhero. What are you thinking? And I said, you know, kind of like, because I have another children's book coming out next year. And I said, I want to begin to build on, like, similar to like the Marvel characters, you know, just similar, you know, just a league of superheroes, neurodivergent superheroes. And he said, okay, well, what are her favorite colors? And we noticed that she liked anything pink pink or purple. So we came up with this cute idea. We said, well,
wait a minute. Are you telling me young girls like pink and purple? it's the pink and purple years.
they absolutely do. So he was just like, he said, well, maybe we'll put her in pink and purple. I said, well, I shared with him the whole Clark Kent Superman type narrative. I said, well, let Camille Moultrie be dressed like in the book when we're talking about Camille Moultrie, let's have her dressed in pink and purple. But when she turns into Awesome Girl, let's put her in those primary colors that people typically associate with autism. Because I really wanted, when someone pick up the book, they see Awesome Girl and they see the colors, I want them to immediately understand where we're going with this. I didn't want to be any confusion about what the character was. I just literally thought I wanted to be in those primary colors, because, you know, when we see, you know, the autism, either the infinity sign or the puzzle pieces, they're always in those primary colors. So that was what I wanted to. I wanted to be easy to understand. I didn't want people to be confused about what we were trying to convey. I wanted them to immediately make the association, and they have.
So when you write something, obviously we're looking for a response from our readers. So tell us a little bit about what types of responses you've gotten from children and adults who've read this book.
I have gotten responses from corporate organizations, corporate leaders, HR leaders, teachers, children. I mean, children are absolutely amazed. And one of the things that really amazed me was the, you know, my daughter's an African-American little girl, and I wanted her to look like an African-American little girl because, you know, representation matters. And one of the things that the challenges that we had for Camille was getting her hair braided. And that's very consistent with a lot of children, period, with autism, African-American, Caucasian, Hispanic. A lot of them have sensory issues, and just the touch of their head or different things sometimes overwhelmed them. So we literally started getting her hair braided and getting these little beads on. And she absolutely loves going to the braid salon. We went last night, and that's like her favorite thing. You know, and there were little girls, you know, one of my sorority sisters, her daughter, she bought the book for her daughter, and her daughter was like, I want to be Awesome Girl. I want to outfit like Awesome Girl. She wants to be a superhero. And that's been so amazing. I mean, that's been probably one of the most consistent things to hear mothers tell me as they read the book to their daughters. Their daughters really understood. Like, one of my friends said her daughter was like, she literally reads it to her daughter every night before bedtime. And she said that she wants to be Awesome Girl's friend. She wants to be Awesome Girl's friend. She wants to help her. And that was really, that just brought tears to my eyes, because that's what I want. I want other children who are not on the autism spectrum to want to embrace children that are different, want to create a space for them, want to include them and be their friend and better understand what autism looks like. And they said they want the outfits and the costumes. So I was like, we're going to have to try to get those, make those available for children. And the parents are just like, you know, I just didn't know, you know, this is, you know, I have a cousin who has autism, or I have a nephew or niece with autism, and I just didn't know. And the book really helps to explain some of those challenges that we see in our loved one's child. So now we know how to help support them. We can help give them, you know, we know if they're a picky eater, we know to not try to force them to eat something that they may not be able to tolerate right now, or they, you know, it just really helped open up that conversation. And then HR professionals have said to me, like, this really helps us, you know, as we have employees that care for children with autism. So sometimes they may have to take off to go to therapies or whatever. So it helps them better understand just the conversation, or if they even have employees that have autism, like, how do they help begin to have conversations about accommodations for them? Because you have to do that. So it's just been amazing to see the response from children to just parents, to HR professionals, to principals, teachers. It's just been amazing just to hear that.
How does Camille feel about all that? How does she feel about being a superhero?
I think she loves it. It's so funny because her teacher, you know, because I gave a copy, the first year I did it, I gave a copy to all of the kids in her class, because I wanted them to know that they were superheroes as well. And then her school bought several copies for the library for the kids to check out. And they did a whole thing about her. She makes sure everybody knows that this is me. This is me. She loves it. You know, she loves anytime we're in a space with awesome girl, you know, she loves the attention because she knows that it's her. She knows that we're talking about her. So she loves the attention that comes with it. And I'm proud that she gets to, we get to be the voice of change, or one of the voices of change. Mm-hmm. There's so many people now talking about autism, and it's just, you know, there's an author, Valerie Burton. She says sometimes there are hard things in life, but, you know, we get to do the hard things. And this is one of the things that we get to do. So I'm happy and I'm honored that we get to do this.
So you mentioned that you're writing a new book. So where can our listeners find about your current book and your new projects that you're working on?
You can find us on Instagram, Awesome Girl Books. You can find us on Facebook at Awesome Girls. And we are in the process of creating our webpage, website, Awesome Girl. It's just that Awesome Girl. Hopefully that should be ready in the next month. And additionally, we're working on our second book, Awesome Girl and Friends. The goal is to have it ready by February, just in time for Exceptional Awareness Month, Exceptional Education Awareness Month. And in this book, we are introducing two new characters. We're introducing a little girl with Down syndrome, and we are introducing a little boy with ADHD. So these are also neurological disabilities, differences. And we just really want to embrace differences, because that's one thing I look at in Camille's classroom. There are children with cerebral palsy. There's a little girl with Down syndrome, you know, kids with just different disabilities. And oftentimes people just, we see them, but we don't really understand what challenges that they may be going through, or just don't even understand it. So, you know, I really felt, you know, an urging to just really begin to share more about our children with disabilities and differences.
Well, this sounds fantastic.
I just love how many times you said the word understanding in the last 10 minutes, because that's what it's all about for me, is finding the understanding so that we can work together, regardless of where you are on any spectrum. I don't care which spectrum we talk about. Let's understand each other. And then the second step for me is caring about each other. And understanding is the first step. And it's fantastic that you've been able to create that in so many communities.
Absolutely. And that's the thing for me, that empathy and that caring, because, you know, we often think about the world now. Like I was talking to another friend of mine. It's the world is changing so much. But one thing I've observed about children now and this generation, what generation is this? Gen Z and the generation
Gen Alpha.
Gen Alpha. Yep.
Gen Alpha. They are so accommodating and they are so accepting. And I think, you know, this is a perfect time in the world to begin to share these types of things. You know, they are expressive and they are more open to understanding. I mean, when we were growing up, there were kids with autism. There are kids with Down syndrome. I mean, we know that, but we didn't really engage them as much, you know? Mm-hmm. And so you have generations of people who didn't really understand. We just knew that they were different. We didn't know why they were different, or, you know, how to help them or support them. I don't even know that we even thought about supporting them and helping them, but they were there. Mm-hmm. And now children are just so much more open and welcoming and supportive to persons with differences. And that's just amazing to me. So I said, we need to just jump in here. This is a prime time to jump in here to really share differences and share stories about differences to help get the understanding and the acceptance that's going to be needed to carry these persons through life.
It really is their special gift. This generation's special gift is just accepting people for who they are, and such a different level than we have in the past. Not that we didn't try. It's just they just are much more aware of it. Certainly, listen, this has been an incredible interview, and I thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate this opportunity just to share about the book. You know, this is October the 1st. We're halfway through Hispanic Heritage Month, which is September the 15th through October the 15th. We even translated the book in Spanish. Nice. Chica Asombrosa. So yeah, the book is available in Spanish and in English on Amazon. And we even have a companion coloring and activity book that goes with the book as well. So, I mean, we just really, really want to get the conversation started and continued rather about autism and autism awareness.
And we'll have all of those links in our notes also.
Fantastic. Awesome. Carla Moultrie, thank you so much. Her book is Awesome Girl, The Awesome World of Camille Moultrie, Second Grade.
Thank you so much for having me.
Scroll with it.
Brings us to our scroll with it. Oh, boy. You know how to really make me watch sports, Chip?
How would you do that? It's particularly last Sunday.
You make it into a cartoon or a video game. We got the opportunity to watch Toy Story meets the NFL on Sunday. They called it Fun Day. And what they were able to do is take the video from the game that was being played in London, right? The Falcons and the Jaguars, and render it into a child view of the NFL football and use the Toy Story characters to tell the story of what was happening in that game.
So let's make sure we're clear on this. You're in Andy's room from the movie Toy Story. There is a real football game being played on another network
in London.
That's right. And so they took the live feed and they were able to make, I mean, what essentially was computer graphics of the teams playing, with all the Toy Story characters serving as officials and cameramen and cheerleaders and any number of things going on at that time.
All the players rendered into this computer-generated view of what's happening in that game, with the commentators giving us a child's view of what's happening and explaining it on a child's level.
So this is the second time that ESPN has attempted this. The first time was last March, where there was an NHL Hockey League game called the Big City Greens Classic between the Washington Capitals and the New York Rangers. I like this, and particularly with the idea that the announcers spent a lot of effort to teach the rules of the game to a young person.
And I think that is vital to the future of the NFL. I think kids want to be a part of this, and giving them the information that they need in order to show them that this is fun and important to our culture is something that the NFL has been working on.
And if you think 10 years from now, think 20 years from now, these young people will be the consumers of sporting events, entertainment, things of that nature. And it's important to develop your audience today.
Yeah, I love the Nickelodeon slime version of football where they added computer graphics to the actual video. But this one isn't taking the actual video. Well, it did take the actual video and translated it into this fictional toy world. I love this. I love watching it. It reminded me of some of the video games of the 90s. The rendering is not perfect, but it's really fun to watch.
It's certainly, though, is magical in the sense that it was a live telecast, just an alternate telecast of that live game. Incredible.
Steve, I look forward to what we can do with that in the future.
Steve, but if you do like ESPN and you're part of the package where it's Hulu and Disney Plus and things of that nature, Yeah, Disney's making some decisions.
Yep, they are taking a hard look at password sharing and thinking about cracking down on people who use their service in other than their main household. Netflix had a great success with this year, and I think Disney Plus is the next company that's going to be really trying to crack down on password sharing.
Sure.
One of the other things that we keep talking about is cable television and how sports is a part of cable television. This broadcast is not on cable. This was something that we had to look at through either Hulu or ESPN Plus, and how sports play into cable is a big discussion we've been having.
Well, HBO Max or Max has also just announced that they're going to have sporting events coming up. They're going to offer them for free up until, I think, February. And at that point, it's going to be an additional cost to the Max service. Hmm. Obviously, they're looking at cable success. And really, the only reason a person would have cable at this point is to have access to sporting events or a cable alternative like YouTube TV or Sling TV or something like that, a streaming service. By incorporating sporting events into them, is your streaming service more valuable? I think we're going to have to wait and see. If you're going everywhere trying to figure out where games are streaming, then it's going to get lost.
Mm-hmm.
But on some other level, using the Apple TV app, where everything kind of funnels through it. I use Apple TV.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't really matter where it's streaming. If you have access to that streaming service, it'll just pop up. Oh, there's a game on.
I think that we are still in transition with a lot of that stuff, and I look forward to the future of how we get our media. We're going to see a big change with Hollywood in the next, 2 years. The Hollywood writer strike ended last week under 150 days long. The SAG actors strike continues, and I think we're going to see a big impact on media for a long time from these negotiations.
We'll see.
Video game actors voted to authorize a strike as well. So the video game actors and the media actors of all types are eyeing the future of contracts and how we get compensated for our work. United Auto Workers strike continues. That's going to impact a lot of things as well. They've expanded their strike to more plants this week for the second week in a row. We'll see how all of that works out for everybody. FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, is testing an alert system on your cellular device tomorrow at 2:20 p.m. Eastern. That's 1:20 p.m. Central Time, just in time for my 8-hour class.
This is a test. This is only a test. Steve, we're very familiar with that over the air.
Right.
And many people do not have over-the-air services.
Mm-hmm.
So this will be something that will work through a cell phone, or will it work through your computer too? Is it just a cell phone?
I believe this is just cellular communications for now, but logically speaking, we are seeing our communications through so many different media now than we used to. The radio and the TV that used to give us emergency signals, now we need to change.
Well, in fact, this is very important, because if there was a national emergency or a regional emergency, that ability to make people aware has really been muddied quite a bit with the decline in newspapers, the decline in, cable TV subscriptions. This is about as close to universal as we can get.
Mm-hmm. So I look forward to the quote from Engadget is my favorite. This could easily be described as a jarring and an obnoxious alarm that will immediately make you stop what you're doing, utter select obscenities, and pick up your phone to make it stop. So everybody be aware that is happening. This is only a drill, and drills are important.
Steve, do we have any news from maybe a paradise-like American area?
Oh, I am so excited to tell you about this one, Chip. The former site of the Arecibo Radio Observatory in Puerto Rico is being retrofitted. News came out this week, big announcement, that the National Science Foundation has chosen four institutions to take charge of the site's transition. They're going to invest $5.5 million over the next 5 years to build a STEM education hub focused on life science and computer science. My trip to Puerto Rico, I am ready to go visit the former Arecibo Radio Observatory and go learn some science.
Well, that's beautiful. That's why you have that Google Flights app that's available through your browser, Steve.
I'm ready. We've been thinking about going to Puerto Rico for a long time. The Arecibo telescope, you might remember, collapsed a few years back, and so it is no longer there, but they have plans, $5.5 million plan to make it something special. You have been doing some special work, my friend. You are going on to one of our favorite podcasts this week, Munson's at the Movies, to discuss the career of Steve Carell.
That's what she said.
Perfect. Those of you who have been fans of Munson's at the Movies, you already know they feature an in-depth conversation about the career of one actor, and that's a really fun format, and it's fun that you are appearing for your fifth time on that show.
Steve, I'm becoming either the Tom Hanks or the Steve Martin, like they are of SNL.
Okay.
That's my job on Munson's at the Movies. Obviously, our listeners are very familiar with Kyle Hickman, because every time we get together for an Oscars party, he has seen all the movies and we have seen some of them, Steve.
And I have seen almost none of them. That's my favorite part of the Oscars party. Like, I haven't seen this movie.
But I've got strong opinions.
Of course I do. I look forward to listening to that. I love your conversations with other podcasts. I don't know, Chip. I think we have enough information to survive another week. What do you think?
Only if we can come back next week, Steve.
I think we can. We want to thank Carla Moultrie for coming in and telling us all about her children's book, Awesome Girl. Go to Amazon.com or wherever books are sold and share some understanding. I loved that conversation. We would love to hear from you. Give us a call or a text. Our phone number is 805-4104-TMS. Our website is TooMuchScrolling.com. Our email is TooMuchScrolling@gmail.com. We're on Threads and X.com and Instagram and Facebook. We're on Spotify and Apple Podcasts and YouTube. And you can always ask your smart speaker to play the latest episode of Too Much Scrolling. I want to thank you again for listening to Too Much Scrolling. I'm Spooky Steve Fodor.
Well, I'm Pumpkin Spice Chip Essenplum.
He changed it at the end. Write it down, folks. See you in the future.